Griffin and the Myths actually have a lot of similarities in terms of their approaches and their feelings on writing. And the intro to the Meso is a really good starter, just in the way that they define, within a lot of very like essay-like structure, she defines the difference between like nonfiction and the essay, or creative nonfiction and the essay. Anyway, just for some background, Griffin is a poet, essayist, and a play and screenwriter living in Berkeley. She was born in L.A. in 1943, and throughout her life and in her writing has been very influenced by growing up post-World War II and in the Sierra Nevadas along the Pacific Coast. She derives a lot of her work, or she has focused a lot on the interconnectedness between destruction of nature, the diminishment of women and racism, and how war derives from like denial or denying your female or your public and your private life. On page 304, if you turn to that, I think that she sort of introduces the difference between the novel and the essay. She says, why is it the novel can enter the private sphere in a way, for instance, the essay cannot? One answer presents itself immediately. The novel is fiction. It is not true. It exists in an epistemological category unto itself. And then, still, the reality of fiction is not to be confused with reality. And I thought one of the interesting parts is that after she has said this, she goes on to say, I kind of remember whether my grandmother let me have those shoes. And throughout the text, she plays between this sort of normal text and the italicized versions. And I thought that in the normal text section, she presents everything in a very structured, sort of calculated, typical way of writing. She calls on other writers and works such as Anna Karenina and Madame Bovary to support herself. However, in the italicized sections, it's all in her memory, and we're simply dipping into these bouts of memory that she has. She's the only one to support herself. She's also constantly referring back to different images like red and figures of her grandmother and her mother. And this sort of constant rediscovery becomes a theme that carries out throughout the whole text. And I thought that although she might be repetitive, each repetition is really a rediscovery. So she's, I think, creating a lot of... she's in her form and in her approach, she's really making a statement on the difference between a novel and an essay, because the essay sort of pads her novel as she or her memory as she's writing it. As she's talking about the difference between like private and public life, and on page 303 and 304, she refers to how the female world, bounded as it is, contains, as does any world, rich layers of meaning. It is not simply that a woman must stay within this world, but that signification itself is kept away from it. Although she says that the feminine world is more private, she does open it up. She does open up layers of depth and meaning to various other worlds. So in a sense, she doesn't isolate it to be just a feminist thing. However, it's in her writing, she refers multiple times to her grandmother and her mother, but her grandfather, she can only really connect to when he's absent. She connects to his objects, his desk, his pen. And I think that the question of what is creative nonfiction comes across when she's trying to define who her grandmother was and who her mother was as a very absent figure. And on page 312, she says, of course I'm embellishing. I doubt that my grandmother wore white. It is the color one is supposed to wear if one is a woman in a pastoral setting. I was really struck by this because she's accepting that she might be fabricating something. And on one level, I think that she's saying that there is a greater force that sort of condemns a woman to wear white in a pastoral setting that makes a statement. At the same time, I thought personally that by putting her grandmother in white, whether or not she remembers it as that, she was the only one who's in this memory. And to bring the reader to the point where she is in the memory, to evoke the same feeling, she has to put her grandmother in white because it's a symbol that we can all recognize. So I would argue even if she is fabricating something or embellishing, she's still staying true to a point, to a feeling, and so therefore it's not totally fictional. So, moving on to Meso, who does a lot with repetition. Meso is an American poet and novelist. She's typically categorized as being postmodern. She is currently an English professor at, I believe, Brown. And she sees women as being the only oppressed group in our world, culture, society, who sleep, live, and interact with the oppressor, who she labels as the men, the male. She sees desire and connection, or desire in the body, as being very connected, and she really incorporates that those notions into her work, as well as bringing in different elements from newspapers, from articles, other poets, even artwork, to really texturize her writing. So, I mean, her piece is really striking in that it's, I would say, it's she's constantly trying to define what is a saint. That's why I saw every single line of this. And you could take each one separately, almost. But what I think, even though she, in the way that she has all these different, like, individual concepts of what a saint might be and trying to define it, it does make it harder to read. You have to really take your time, and you're constantly having to go back with her as she goes back to reinterpret and reevaluate what a saint might be. But at the same time, she really engages the reader by asking the reader to trust her, to follow her as she's reinterpreting what a saint is, and as she's reinterpreting and looking at the images she comes up with. And she does hit on various concepts, like on page 394 and 395, the concept of a saint holding. Novice, you know, how many things do they hold, and what does it mean when they hold these? And she sometimes dips in and out of very earthly ideas and then going up, you know, sort of like she's releasing a saint into the air. Can't find it. I can't find it. But I think she does it several times. She also, so I think that shows how much she's rediscovering everything, how much rediscovery you can have. There are also moments where she's really sort of checking up on herself. She says her favorite words were fire and blood on page 402. And then she says, what is the head doing off? And I think earlier, before, she refers to a dog and like, how did the dog get in there? And it's just, it's a cool moment of her saying, you know, what's going on with my writing? Like, where is it going? But she keeps on going. And that engages the reader. On an opposite stance, I would say that when she brings in page 404 and 405, the French, or quotes from elsewhere, a rain of roses will follow my death, or at least she italicizes them. Previously, she's going around, not around in a circle, but as they say in the introduction, that an essay is something that's constrained by margins and in a format, and you can only go from start to end. A novel can go start to end, to start to end, start to end, and rehash everything. I think that by bringing in different quotes and different languages, she opens up that that sense of being in a cycle and the perspective of the narrator. So as I was reading it, it's like defining part of who is the narrator, who is the writer. She's somebody whose mind reaches beyond these, and she's aware of other parts of the world influencing her writing. And I think that you can also do a very close analysis of the texture of the words that she chooses. She uses some very blood and light collected in a chalice, and music for a too late afternoon. There are some, I think there are some lines in here that don't have a whole lot like on their own to do with things, but depending on where they're put in the text and where their inspiration comes from, you can read based on the line before it. That there's a fair amount of, you know, she's thinking about where these ideas are coming from and how the feeling of a saint is reflected in her words. So one question that I would have to open a conversation is whether or not either, well, mostly in The Griffin, do we respond more, or did you respond more to the the standard text or to the italicized text, which is more a membrane, sort of a more human instance.